In the kitchen, we had the phrase, when in doubt, throw it out. It meant that if the food in question was in question, don't feed it to somebody. There's another less rhythmic saying, which is, when in doubt, don't recycle. By this, I mean, avoid the green bins. Of course, people have been reducing and reusing and recycling about 10 minutes after the first sock got a hole. Conserving and reusing what we had is far from a new idea. There was, and to a degree remains, an economic incentive to repair instead of replace. The access to massive abundance has made that need a luxury, and for better or worse, I hope to show that the jury is still out on that. The Culinary Libertarian Podcast, episode 72.
Welcome to the Culinary Libertarian Podcast, where the philosophy is free, but the food is on you.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to the podcast. Dan Reed here, the Culinary Libertarian. Happy to have you here. Happy to be here. Surf over to my podcasts page, culinarylibertarian.com/podcasts, to find all the previous episode links. From that same podcasts page, you can follow and support the Culinary Libertarian on the various social media platforms through the tabs I have there, and join the Eating Liberty Facebook group. Sharing the shows from your social media feeds also helps support the show. In addition to sharing the shows, you can support the show with podcast ratings and reviews on your favorite podcatcher. And you can help keep the show going with donations of fiat currency through PayPal, Patreon, or Bitcoin. And speaking of those podcatchers, the Culinary Libertarian Podcast is now also part of the Cerberus Radio Network, linked on the podcast page, and it can also be heard on SoundCloud, which is linked on today's show notes page. It's a solo episode today, getting into the weeds of recycling and how good intentions can often lead in completely opposite directions. And it seems almost always those good intentions are forced by government. Throw your yogurt container in the trash. This seems almost blasphemous. The state's, maybe even the country's dogma of recycling has us feeling guilty when we actually throw trash into the trash. But with changes in China's policies in early 2019 and the overwhelming glut of plastic cans and paper, those items are being stored as massive bales or giant squares of crushed cans, just sitting, waiting for Godot, perhaps, at recycling or processing centers. With market prices for those cans and bottles and paper falling, the stockpile of recycled trash increases, and incentives to do something with those bales of trash wane. Yes, today's episode is about recycling, or more accurately, about not recycling. I'm going to put the transcript that I had written up on today's show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/72, because it kind of gets a little too much to want to listen to, because some of it's a little bit the silly numbers thing. And so the whole thing started, View things seem as dangerous as someone in a position of elected authority with an idea how to use your money and implement the force of government to solve, I air quoted that word, a problem. So, as I said, recycling is the issue, and it starts with a poor pitch to address a problem, as well as an inability to comprehend alternative solutions, which is a restatement of Frederick Bastiat's seen and unseen idea. So let's take them in order. The seen, what appears to be an abundance of stuff, and the unseen, the consequences of government action. Now, you attentive listeners might object that my premise is flawed, that obviously there is an abundance of stuff, but the unseen consequences of government action seems to conclude only that government offers, more air quotes, a solution. Well, that's a fair point, and I'm going to get to how free market, I know that that's a buzzword, can actually help in this issue. So the whole thing, and I mentioned this a minute ago, the whole thing started with a post on my local version of a popular neighborhood social media app. And this particular individual posted a link to some recycling propaganda about the amazing claim that every 90 days, the quantity of aluminum cans thrown into landfills can build the nation's commercial air fleet. Well, now that's kind of amazing. And it's completely wrong. So the quick part is, and this is the part that I want to have posted if you want to read it. And I admit that I'm not a mathematician. So my math, if it's wrong, well, okay, it's wrong. I don't think it's wrong by a lot. And the point remains the same. The point is this. Even with some concessions about the size of the commercial air fleet and how big any one particular plane actually is, and then the vast numbers of those planes, it would take a staggering, I mean, like just an unbelievable quantity of numbers of cans, and never mind pounds of cans, to build the commercial air fleet. And that excludes entirely the cans sitting on the shelf and the cans waiting to be made to hold more beverages. So it's just a lot of horse pucky. One of my retorts, and we'll leave it here, is that, and there's I have a lot of sources I'm using, and I'm going to put links to all these on the show notes page so you can read through them and see if I've misread them. And that's fine. That's legitimate. It's fair. Go ahead. The kind of aluminum used for airplanes isn't the same aluminum as used for cans. So even if the premise is right, even it's true that all the cans thrown into the landfill equal the amount of cans, aluminum, necessary to build the fleet, it's not the same kind of aluminum. So it's just stupid. It just is. It's irresponsible. So the easy diversion in many political topics is the appeal to emotion. And we can already see that part of this is in play. Well, we're throwing away airliners. Well, can you recycle a plane? So there's, when the thing is so big, how could you possibly question it? Surely somebody did the research on this. Well, that's the first mistake from the reader. But again, the trusting of the source, there's just fallacies abounding. But how we can come back to thinking about this in a different way to solve a problem which excludes the government. And so this is the thing. And economics is how we're going to do this. Now, it's not the going to the store and spending money thing exactly, but there's a way to view these things, pretty much any problem, in a different light. And a lot of us aren't trained, and I'm not trained in economic thinking, but I've learned to understand how an economist thinks. Now, but that does not make me an economist. Please don't misunderstand me. But an economist generally is going to ask the unseen question, well, but what about, what happens next? So what about, you know, anyway, so I'm doing a poor job of representing economists, but I'm a cook. So I guess I have that luxury. Recycling has mostly been monopolized by state governments and in some cases with bottle can deposits, at least in Oregon and Michigan and other states. No private enterprise is allowed to compete for picking up the recycling. There's no actual information about the economics of recycling since there's no market pricing in place when the private waste management company contracted by the state and only them. So yeah, sure, private industry to a degree, but no one else. So that's monopolization. I don't care too much about that, except if you're going to tell me this is important, give me a choice. There's no choice. Since the state does not need to show a profit, the true costs of the things are never known. We're told these cans and bottles are resources, but how do we know that? There's an easy observation to be made to verify or discredit the claim that those things are resources. If they had value, somebody would be coming and pilfering all the recycling bins of all the things of value. Well, I'm telling you, they're doing that. They're taking zero things because nothing in there is of value. It's not a resource. Let's go to those cans just for one second because I did find the source here. It turns out what I mentioned to you about the cans not being the same kind of cans, aluminum, in the article on lewrockwell.com, Michael Shedlock writes, quote, used cans are piling up at scrapyards because U.S. aluminum companies are turning fewer of them into new metal, another indication of the economic challenges facing recycling, end quote. Again, that link will be on the show notes page. The quip is recycling, an idea so grand it was forced by nearly every state. One point proponents almost demand is recycling pays for itself, except it doesn't. If the cans of bottles and paper hold such a value, why are the citizens either being taxed for the pickup or directly billed, and possibly even both of those things? If the trash has such a great value, why can't it pay for the pickups? Elena Samuels, who wrote an article for TheAtlantic.com, writes in her piece, Is This the End of Recycling? Quote, waste management companies across the country are telling towns, cities, and counties that there is no longer a market for their recycling. These municipalities have two choices, pay much higher rates to get rid of recycling or throw it all away, end quote. That's a tough spot. Waste that is really trash, no one wants the recycling, and there's no profit for manufacturers to use the, use the used plastic cans, plastic bottles and cans. So what do we do with the massive amount of plastic? I'm not going to tell you there isn't a lot of plastic. Of course there's a lot of plastic. That would be a silly thing to say. I personally don't drink sodas, but we do buy some condiments that come in plastic. This house, my house, produces a lot of aluminum cans from seltzer, flavored seltzer. It's weird, but they like the flavored seltzer water. So I take those cans, I buy those cans, and I pay the state an additional dime per can in an interest-free loan, which I get returned to me by going to a building built by the state at taxpayer expense, with big fancy computerized machines, which paid for by taxpayer expense, which sorts the glass and the cans and the bottle, plastic bottles, into various spots. Yeah, it's kind of impressive to watch. But then I get this little chit and I go to this other computer and I get my money back that I lent the state at an interest-free loan. I'm going to get to the unsecured glass bottles in just a minute, but before I do that, let's listen to a word from my sponsor. Hey folks, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me tell you why. It's free. Free is good. They have creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or your computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, CastBox, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with sponsors, just like this one, with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And if you use your phone, you can be podcast on the spot, getting news and interesting things, whatever appeals to you, wherever you are. Download the free app to your phone or go to anchor.fm to get started creating your podcast today. You've listened to The World on Podcasts. Now go tell the world your story. Visit anchor.fm today to get started. Now let's get back into the show. Of the glass which did not have a deposit, so in Oregon that's wine bottles, I and everyone else in my situation gets in our carbon-burning vehicle, drives our bottles to the dump to add to a giant metal bin, which will be hauled off by trucks which were produced by carbon-making factories, burning carbon-based fuels, to some place that will probably not use them for recycling. I talked in the 2020 sense of instant messenger communication with somebody who was in charge of a recycling facility. And I had, and this was a while ago, but I had also read then that there was very little market, very, very low price for recycled glass. And she conceded the point, but then was very, very excited to tell me that some of the glass bottles, wine bottles that she had sent, that her company had sent to some other state for processing, came back to her in the form of sand for the sand blaster. Well, gee, that's thrilling. Let me go buy a sand blaster so I can actually encourage the recycling business. Irony is hard to read and hear in text, but I think she missed my... my underwhelmed face at her pride that was the case. So these bottles she's proud of, or everybody else's, if they go to the place on the truck in the big bin that I had to drive to fill the bin, they get to the place, then they have to be washed. Some of them are discarded because maybe there's stuff inside, mold, who knows what. That takes more construction and more taxpayer money to build these things and more staff. And before you know it, this is an expensive operation. Expensive to the taxpayers and ostensibly to the environment they claim they mean to save. So let's get back to plastic. There is a lot. The plan proposed by the person in that neighborhood app, which got my dander up, is called ERP, Extended Producer Responsibility, and has been or is planned in a few U.S. states and other countries. So the quick version is this. Companies which produce plastics, which end up as waste, or tires, or mattresses, or mercury thermostats, or plastic bottles, or focusing on the plastic bottles, as is the idea, according to my neighborhood app person, the company producer pays a fee to somebody to have that bottle returned to the plant. That keeps it out of the landfill, which is a whole other show. It ought not be difficult to see immediately a few issues here. First, the government, as in California, and I'll post that link on today's show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/72, has an outline of what agencies the state is to create, what they are to do, and how they might enforce noncompliance. Well, more state, more agencies, more thuggery for your soda bottle. Well, this sounds a lot like the unintended consequences, although quite honestly, if the state's involved, I'm pretty sure this is entirely the plan. But wait, there's more. companies which bottle drinks do not have the machinery to recycle those bottles. Are they to be forced by the state to comply? At what cost and how? What is the burden to the little company? Now, granted, there probably aren't a lot of little companies, but there will be fewer with all of these regulations that have to be met. There just isn't enough money for that. Are they to be put out of business, these little guys, since the major companies can at least afford to comply? What if they don't? Fines? Jail? Out of business? How does an entire business going out of business help the people working at the business? Now, I can see that gets up to or maybe jumps right into hyperbole. So let's try this. This is from the legislation proposed by Tom Udall and Adam Lowenthal, both Democrats, Tom from New Mexico and Adam from California. So I quote, for the first time in decades, federal legislators will soon consider legislation that would require manufacturers to manage and finance end-of-life recycling programs for product packaging, end quote. Well, that sounds like a bit of thuggery. Here's more. This is the planned legislation, again, linked on the show notes page, and a few highlights that I'm just going to sort of read. These are quotes. Requiring product manufacturers to design, manage, and finance end-of-life management for the packaging of their products. Imposing, clever choice of words, pardon me, imposing national deposit requirements on beverage containers. Imposing a carry-out bag fee. The legislation would require vendors, ellipsis, banning styrofoam, ellipsis, imposing label requirements for plastic. Plastic products will be required, ellipsis, setting recyclability and recycled content thresholds. The legislation would require, and it goes on and on and on. That's an end quote. I say no part of that will go as intended or planned unless the intention and the plan, and you who are as cynical as I, if the intention and the plan is to be completely overbearing, completely inefficient, to build more bureaucracy inside of the bureaucracy, to accomplish nothing except more people driving desks. If that's the goal, then certainly it will succeed with flying colors. So success seems marginal at best, and all success will be paid for by you. It hasn't come up, but there is a wild inequality in this fee system, for the poor will pay a higher percentage of their income to make the politicians feel good. The downstream effects are at least easily guessed. Less revenue due to fewer sales means fewer jobs and possibly fewer businesses. But the big question that seems unanswered is how exactly does paying more for a soda solve the container problem? It seems only trading one carbon for another, if at least. The increase in trucking to transport used containers seems at least a net neutral, but maybe a net negative if noise pollution is added to the mix. Now, again, an economist is going to know better than I about those things, but if a decent amount of just thinking this through at least reveals that this is not a utopia that they want it to be. Unintended consequences should be the government's middle name. No good deed goes unpunished, or the invisible foot of government on the throat of the citizenry. Take your metaphor. Pick your economist. The last one was Milton Friedman. Centralized government power doesn't achieve the goals intended. It never has. It costs money and wastes resources, which everyone will agree are scarce, and the government has no incentive to be efficient. So, if the government isn't going to do it, if the government can't do it, and I think they have aptly demonstrated a stunning incompetence and inability, private enterprise does have incentive to be efficient, but when the government gets involved, those incentives are at least thwarted in a sea of regulation paperwork or flat out stopped. You may not innovate. You must follow the rules. Well, innovation happens, and innovation happens to be a solution to the plastics problem that currently we face. New solutions to the plastic problem may be in the works. I have no idea, but I expect that somebody who can is devising hemp plastic or seaweed plastic or something which holds the raspberries and then can go in the compost bin. I saw somebody had figured out how to take the six-pack container from sodas and beers and make it from something that's biodegradable that turtles can eat. Government didn't do that. Or take, for example, the young student in Oregon who found a bacteria which feeds on the hydrocarbons in the plastics in those soda bottles. Now, that's a cool story. I'll put a link for that on the show notes page. But she concedes that the time when they consume all we discard is a way off. But the fact that she found this thing, and there might be a way to make this, hey, look at this, a whole new industry of plastic eating stuff. Well, there's jobs there. Before I get too far from the premise, which was extended producer responsibility is a bad idea, let's recap. No competition for recyclables. The industry is expensive in money and resources to make the trucks, and the transportation costs are not paid for by the items carted around. Top-down state thuggery of force, fines, or more bureaucracy is not an effective solution, for the state pays no penalty for being wrong or for being inefficient. I'm going to stop here. This has grown into a two-part episode, and I prefer to make the econ part, which is my refutation to the claim that EPR is a good choice, as a separate episode. I will close with this. Reduce and reuse is a great idea. Conservation isn't a bad word. It can mean, first, conserving your cash. Don't like all those plastic soda bottles in bulk in your garage? Buy a SodaStream device. My daughter has one, and she can make any flavored carbonated water she prefers. I like it, for we add no sugar to the water. I like it, for there are no interest-free loans to the state for all those extra bottles. It comes with two reusable bottles, and you get soda on demand. That's innovation solving a few problems, and with the other innovations of the handheld flashlight, calculator, email device, and phone, you can go online and get one now. You can change what goes to the trash by preferring alternative solutions to current problems, and that's going to be a large part of the econ part on the next episode of this. Well, it might be split because I have another episode coming up after this. But anyway, you get the idea. All right, folks, that's going to do it. You already know Valentine's Day is near, right? You did know that, right? Well, maybe you didn't know that right after that is Fat Tuesday, or maybe more popularly known as Mardi Gras. If you can't be on Bourbon Street, and frankly, that's probably good, there's a lot of people there, bring the eats of Bourbon Street to you. I've some recipes and some tips for surviving New Orleans if you go. Visit my blog post page, culinarylibertarian.com/FatTuesday, for the recipe links and some other links to food and gear. Have a good week, and I'll see you soon. We'll be right back. music for the Culinary Libertarian Podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.